It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
It is a numbers game right here at Feast of the Vegas Stats and Information Network. Good morning to you. What's happening, party people? It's Gil Alexander. It's pandemic radio. What I mean by that is nothing but picks in random sports across the landscape today. If you want weekend action, this is the place to be. Jeff Colleandro talking NASCAR with us coming up this hour. They're in Bristol this weekend as NASCAR just keeps putting out races multiple times a week. Ron Flatter will join us. He has some picks in horse racing as well. Some news, obviously, about Nadal, who was the Kentucky Derby favorite, now no longer the favorite and no longer ever going to race again, really. Gambaloo, Lou Finocchiaro, going to talk UFC with us for this weekend. He's got a handful of picks. I think the strongest of which are at the top of the card in terms of Lou's confidence ratings. And then, of course, Chris Felica, who only had one pick yesterday. So the horse racing winning streak did stop at five, but he has no short of seven picks today across the horse racing landscape. So a whole bunch of picks across the board. And then, of course, Vinny Maliulo slow jamming at the end. We will start with Bundesliga, and we'll bring in our buddy from True Media Networks. It's Paul Carr. How you doing, Paul?
Good morning, Gil. I'm ready to get this weekend started.
Yes, we start with soccer in Germany. Before we do that, though, I know you're as big an American football fan as all of us are. And Danny Burke and I, earlier this week, we were talking about how the NFL was considering replacing onside kick with an opportunity for receiving teams, would have been receiving teams, to instead go from scrimmage and try to convert a fourth and 15. Now, up until 2018, onside kicks were recovered at around a 20% rate, a little north of 20%, I believe. Right. And then they had two major rule changes, huge. One of which was no more running starts for the kicking mm-hmm. team, got to stand on the line of scrimmage, and then a minimum of five players on each side of the line of scrimmage, each side of the kicker, that is. Right. And you can't stack it on one side. And that reduced the recovery rate more than half to such a degree that, in essence, the play was kind of meaningless. There was that rash, if you remember, that flurry of onside kick recovery starting on Thanksgiving. But generally speaking, the play had been sort of rendered meaningless. So they were flirting with this. And my point the other day was, I'm curious your thoughts here. My point the other day was, okay, from a fan's perspective, I totally get it. If the play's meaningless, you got to move on. From a bettor's standpoint, for those of us who already may have coined the phrase that betting the NFL against the spread pre-flop is nothing more than the Price is Right Plinko game, where they drop the metal disc, or the metal chip, I should say, down these metal rungs, and it goes crazy back and forth. Okay. This would just make it exponentially worse. And they have come back and they've said, yeah, if we're going to do the fourth and 15, it's not going to be this year. We're delaying it one more year.
Yeah, from a betting standpoint, for sure. I mean, you know, you've talked about how crazy it gets just with 2-point conversions and just the change in the game and people be more aggressive on fourth down, and that makes things crazy. So this would have been really nutty. I can say, so I'm in Kansas. Everyone around here was disappointed they didn't change the rule because Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes. So sure, fourth and 15, whatever. We're not concerned. So, you know, radio around here is like, all right, Chiefs going to get the ball in the opening drive, going to score, going to go for it, going to score again, going to go for it, going to score again. They could be up 21-0 before the other team touches the ball. And that's obviously extreme and optimistic, but that's the kind of fun that we're going to miss out on.
Yeah, I mean, I can see how Kansas City would be arrogant about that, too. You're right. I mean, you know, here were the two sticking points. They said the reason that it sort of got tabled, if you're to believe what is leaking out. One, so if the kicking team, you know, in the past, if they recovered the onside kick, they couldn't advance it from the spot of the recovery. Right. Whereas on fourth and 15, to use the Patrick Mahomes example as a great, you know, sort of reflection of this, it didn't matter how far you got downfield, right? Like, you could convert the 15 yards, you know, by 1 yard, or you could take it to the house and it would
Tyreek
count.
Hill. See ya.
Or anything in between, right? You could advance it far enough where you're right in chip shot, field goal range, whatever. So that was the first thing, because folks were like, okay, I get replacing the onside kick, but if we're tipping the scale that much further to the team that's down in the game, you know, late in the game, if those were the situations that we're talking about, that much, there's something inherently wrong about that, right? We shouldn't get them a get out of jail free card. The other one was that didn't feel right. That was the expression. It didn't feel right to some people. The other one was, and I think this is the bigger one. This is what we avoided more. The notion that it would have put fourth and 15 would have put extra pressure on officials to throw a flag for defensive holding, for illegal contact, for defensive PI. Now, whether they called that, you know, those fouls like they would on a normal play or not, like they would on a normal play, or take a push the flag deeper into their own pockets approach. Right. Either way, it's going to result in more scrutiny. And I could see fans, and maybe you and I would be two of them, who would just be going nuts about it. And I think that's the bigger one.
Yeah, it would be, it'd be really tough. I mean, because if teams are smart, you know, they'd basically, at some point, you almost take, I call it the Joe Flacco approach, and just kind of chuck it downfield when you're in trouble, at least. Just get it down there and see what happens. Because there's no, you're not losing anything by throwing it down there. So that would be, that'd be a tough thing. Cause I looked and I think there were about 130 or so fourth and 15 exactly is over the last, I forget 20 seasons I looked at. And only once I think was there a DPI for a first down, but you know, those are different, very different situations than it would be on kind of a do or die sort of thing that just matters a little bit more than some of those more desperation things.
That's what I love about you, Paul. You and I didn't even plan on talking about this. I didn't share with you that I wanted to bring this up. And you're like, oh, I happened to do a study on fourth and 15s. Turns out only one time did it work out. But that's the difference, right? They would probably, they're human beings in the end. We talk about this in Bundesliga. You know, what's the difference when there's a home crowd on top of you? Let's say the home team is the one losing. You're going to not throw that flag? Look like a flag to me, even though you wouldn't have thrown it in the first quarter, you know. Yeah. So I think the NFL dodgeball, and certainly for bettors, who, again, betting the NFL is already Plinko. People are in contests. And a lot of us live bet the NFL and like to take shots towards the ends of games. Uh-huh. With onside kicks, we can take those shots. Fourth and 15s, that was going to hurt a lot of in-game betting for some of us.
For sure. That would definitely change. I mean, at first, you just wouldn't even know what to do. You know, you kind of, I feel like you'd be almost paralyzed for the first week or two until you see something and how our team's going to approach this. Because we can talk all about how we would do it. Here's what should be done. But you never, I don't know what a coach is going to do. Who knows?
Yeah. And imagine, imagine losing one of those live bets on some nonsense flag. I could just, All right. So. Here's why this is in some way relevant, or at least it's a sort of comp here, is you and I talk Bundesliga these days. And Bundesliga, of course, no fans. And it turns out that when this thing started, home teams weren't winning at all, let alone at a decreased rate. Changed a little bit the other day, and our big question is this something? Where does it stand now, sir?
So pulling up the tote board here, let's see. So Wednesday, actually, five games on Wednesday, and the home teams won two and drew three, so no losses for the first time in any of the days. So overall, we are at 5 wins, 10 draws, 12 losses, so that we've had 3 full match days for Bundesliga teams. And the projections, I forgot to double check the projections after the midweek games, but it's probably in the 13 to 14 range, something around there, for wins that we should have and we've had 5. And then so I wanted to dive, kind of look at the underlying numbers a little bit. So home teams have been outscored 49 to 35, which is a lot since home teams usually outscore their opponents. And so looking at the expected goals numbers, this is, these are the underlying numbers. So this is how many goals would you be expected to score if you took these shots every game. And so if you over or under achieve, then you might be running hot. There might be some bad luck involved, whatever. So home teams have underachieved by about 5.5 goals and road teams have overachieved by about 9 goals. So expected goals numbers are basically even for home and away teams, but that still means things have changed because usually home teams are significantly ahead. You know, it's half a goal or more per game on average. So I guess what all this says to me is this is something. It's not as much as it has appeared through 3 weeks based on results, but this is something. It's kind of what we hypothesized that, you know, home field would be less. So it seems like it is less. How much less is still, I think, to be determined, but it is a little bit less, but maybe not as extreme as we saw the first week or two.
Yeah, but underachieved, home teams underachieving by 5.6 goals, road teams overachieving by 9.4 goals. Yeah, it's got to be a little bit of something, I think, in the end.
A little bit of something.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit of something. That's what we concluded, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
It's our investigative report. A little bit of something happening with the difference with no crowds. So the other day, by the way, we're talking to Paul Carr at Paul Carr, C-A-R-R on Twitter, True Media Network's Paul Carr. And didn't go well the other day. We had Bayern. Who did we have? No, we had Leipzig.
Leipzig to win by a goal and a half and to win the first half. They ended up tied at halftime and won by a goal. So that didn't work out. Yeah.
You're allowed to lose. But it looked like at the end that the opposing goaltender was going to give us a shot there at 2-1, yeah. But
didn't quite work out. The hope that kills you, right?
That's right. I would rather have not have gone through the roller coaster of emotions in that one. All right, but today, you got two picks. Where are you going here? I see we're going back to an old favorite of ours.
Yeah, so this game's today here. Leverkusen is at Freiburg. I'm taking Leverkusen to win, -145. So Leverkusen had a weird game where they got smoked by Wolfsburg midweek, but they looked really good their first couple games back. Leverkusen's one of the better attacking teams in the league. They're second in goals, third in expected goals in three games since the restart. And they're going against a Freiburg team that gives up a bajillion shots. And so they've allowed 66 shots in these three games. That's 18 more than any other team has allowed. So again, 66 shots in three games. No other team's allowed more than 48. And they're generally decent shots, second most expected goals Freiburg's given up in the league. So I like Leverkusen getting a win at Freiburg here today at -145 there.
All right. And one more for the weekend.
So I'm going to take a draw here. I don't do a ton of draws. Buddy Dan McGuire on Twitter at Arsenal DMC did the math, and draws are up 14 units since the restart. So that's in 27 games, they're up 14 units on the draw. So, and this kind of goes to the home field advantage, not quite as strong. So leaning into that a little bit today with Schalke, or this game is tomorrow rather, Schalke and Werder Bremen draw at +230. I always like low scoring teams if I'm going to take a draw, and these teams have three goals in six games since they're coming back. And that's about in line with their expected goals numbers as well. They're both in the bottom four in the league. Schalke has been sputtering. I mean, even before the break, I think they're winless in 10 straight games overall. Werder Bremen, again, same sort of thing. They've been kind of scuffling all season offensively, especially. They got an American kid, Josh Sargent, up top, who's played decently but hasn't had a lot of help. So I like the draw here. Schalke, Werder Bremen, this game's tomorrow, +230 the price for me.
All right, Leverkusen today, and then Schalke, Werder Bremen with the draw tomorrow, yep. +230, the rare Paul Carr draw happening in Bundesliga this weekend. All right, Paulie, we appreciate it as always, man. Thank you.
You bet. Have a good weekend.
You too. Just the first sport of a cavalcade of different sports to bet on this weekend. The other, by the way, before we go to the break here, I wanted to sneak this in here at the top, because the other big sort of sports betting news yesterday before we move on to NASCAR next. Yesterday, my beloved native Washington, D.C., unveiled some of their betting offerings, their new Gambit offering there in the District of Columbia. And as always, our buddy Captain Jack was on the job, sort of breaking it down and looking at this stuff. Let me just say, growing up in D.C., one of the things that we always knew was a consistent truism is that if government, local government was involved, chances are, city government I'm talking, chances are things would get messed up. So when I found out that D.C. was getting gambling to begin with, I was like, oh, this is going to go well. I say that sarcastically. So yesterday, and let's throw up the first Captain Jack tweet, because there's so much to dive into here, but we'll just give you the headlines. First of all, NFL games put up -118 on each side. So hopefully you get right off the bat, this is not going to go well. So people on Twitter were chiming in, and correctly so, but obviously that's the headliner because people love betting the NFL. -118 lines on the NFL. But then Jack goes on to say, and here's correctly so, the NASCAR event, which we'll get to here after the break with Jeff, if we could throw that back up, the theoretical hold, how they had it up first, a staggering 75.42%, as Jack says here, dizzying even for a lottery. Now, they tweaked it afterwards. Now, who knows if Twitter provoked this or not. They tweaked it at, and they switched these odds that you saw, which were, I guess, were to win when they initially put it up in his initial tweet. Then they said, oh, no, those were top threes. I believe that's what they did. Then they added top five and group bets. And essentially, they reduced the theoretical hold to 33.77%. And again, as Jack points out, not great, but not nearly as egregious as the first time around. And then the final one, which I think is one of the big points in all of this, the real winners, biggest winner in D.C. today, Ted Leonsis and William Hill, who will be Gambet's biggest competition in D.C. despite being retail only. Oh, and also the offshore industry. And then a shout out to a offshore titan when he says, fire up another cigar, Ron. Yes, offshore always wins. This is what we've been saying from the beginning. If you are going to make the better's experience terrible, offshore is going to win. Now, here's the thing. Jack and I were sort of going around about this. Like, you know, I could hit up my friends now in D.C. and be like, you got to open this and we got to do this. Like with everything, with new groups of bettors, if they haven't bet before, they weren't comfortable betting offshore, and now they've got this first opportunity to do so, they may not know any better, even despite my efforts to educate, and in the end, they may not care. That's what these jurisdictions are counting on. Please care, DC bettors, about the product that was unveiled yesterday. By the way, they threw up second half lines for NFL games already, and fourth quarter lines. What are they doing? We'll come back. Speaking of NASCAR, we'll talk NASCAR this week with Jeff Colyandro next on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
And for those who missed it going into the break, that's right, I said it. DC has fourth quarter lines up in these NFL games 4 months in advance. As Captain Jack Andrews told me yesterday, not even the most daring Euro book does that 4 months before a game. My God. It's Gil Alexander, everybody. How you doing? Live in San Francisco. Bundesliga picks are in. We'll review all of these later in the show. If you miss it, we'll put them all together across all sports. Time to talk a little NASCAR. Last night, after being delayed 24 hours, they were able to run the ALSCO 500. There was a delay in the middle of this one. It was there was lightning, there was rain, 75-minute delay, about 30 laps in. But in the end, Chase Elliott was your winner last night. Elliott, who has obviously had a go of it here early on in the post-pandemic or mid-pandemic NASCAR season. Remember, three cup races ago last week, he was trying to race for the lead at Darlington. He was wrecked by Kyle Busch. And then more heartbreakingly, so on Sunday at the Coca-Cola 600, NASCAR's longest event, remember he had the checkered flag in sight until a caution caused by his own teammate. And then he had to, he didn't have to. Here was the big decision. He decided, or his crew decided, to pit him from the lead, took four tires, couldn't get back to the front. In the two-lap overtime sprint. But last night, 27 miles to go, he overtook Kevin Harvick, and that was it. At the 35-mile mark, 35 miles from the end, it should be noted, he asked his crew, he's like, do I pit here or can I make it to the end? They're like, you can make it to the end this time, buddy. And that's what he did. So Chase Elliott, the winner last night. We bring in Jeff Colyandro, our NASCAR expert at NASCAR Visionary on Twitter. You split your head-to-heads, but Chase Elliott finally got it done.
Yeah, this sure. Year. You know, he had the best car last night, Gil, really. He was really strong. He moved up through the field, took the lead. Kevin Harvick was really his only competition. And then Harvick dropped like a rock. And from there, Elliott was basically able to cruise to victory. So he was the deserving winner last night, without question.
Yeah, we did win Dylan over Bowyer, Dylan minus 120. So it was a splitsville on the picks. Okay, this weekend, because this just keeps on coming with NASCAR, the Supermarket Heroes 500, we go to Bristol Sunday, 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 Pacific. And let's start with a caveat, Jeff. We must do this if we're being responsible here with your NASCAR approach.
Yeah, absolutely, Gil. This is, at some level, still really throwing darts. And all we're really going off is analytics. We don't have the just, you know, our mainstay, which is watching the weekend progression. And that's definitely sliced my plays by 4/5 at least. So this is just sort of play around time until we get back to some real racing with a genuine schedule that we know and can trust. You know, for now, we're just trying to work off some of the analytics, and the cars are basically like dropped out of a balloon and off they go, and we see how it shakes out.
All right. So with that as a backdrop, and again, we hesitate to do this, but with that as a backdrop, if you are looking at head-to-heads just to appease a certain section, what might they be? You will update these in your podcast and on Twitter later. That's what we want to say.
Yeah. I'll have a podcast tomorrow come out about noon. You know, I think you just got to look at the drivers who have been so successful. And you start with Kyle Busch. He's won 3 out of the last 6. You know, the interesting thing about Kyle Busch is he started from a median position of 12th, but finished in a median position of 2.5. Now, if you're going from 12th to 2nd or 3rd, you've had to work your way through some really stout traffic. And that shows me that he's been able to pass the best cars on the circuit at Bristol. And getting around Bristol is really just that. It's knowing how to get around Bristol. And either you're, you know, successful with it or you're not. But it's typically more about how you can negotiate that track.
Okay, so Kyle Busch is in your crosshairs where you're going to think about this.
Definitely going to look at him. And the other one would be Ryan Blaney. I think I see him as much as 18-1 right now to win the race. He's tied Kyle Busch with the average of 63 laps led per Bristol race over the last 6 races. He has 4 top 10s in his last 6, and I think he's flown under the radar. He's also at 40-1 to win the title at the Circa right now, compared to 16-1 at some other shops. I think there's value on Ryan Blaney going long.
Okay. If there's any head-to-heads that you're thinking about, I'll get them from you over the break, and I'll report them back. Otherwise, we'll wait for you to do so once you have your approach honed in more on this one. Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it.
You got it, Gil.
Jeff Colleandro talking about this weekend's Supermarket Heroes 500 in Bristol. I'll try to see if he has any head-to-head thoughts and report him back right after the break. Ron Flatter on the retirement of Nadal. Not that Nadal, the horse racing Nadal. Coming back right here at VSiN.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Yesterday on the show, yes, not on the show, but just in real life after the show, this man texted me, hey, rumor that Nadal is retiring. I got to check on this. And I quickly responded to him, we are talking about the horse, right? Ladies and gentlemen, to discuss such a retirement, if you will, in horse racing, and a big one because this was the de facto Kentucky Derby favorite until yesterday, it's our own Ron Flatter. Good morning to you, Ron.
Yes, good morning. I'll do that due diligence. By the way, we were talking about Nadal. How many times do you see this on Twitter now? I was so relieved to see the news after I saw that blank was trending. And yeah, we saw that with Nadal, you know, Rafael Nadal. But the horse name for the tennis player was retired. He was hurt yesterday in a workout. And he'll be all right. He'll be, you know, he'll be a daddy of a bunch of little horse racing colts and fillies eventually. But right now, he's got a couple of screws in his what's called his condyle, which is like the bone structure above the knee, because he got hurt yesterday. And you can't race with a cracked bone if you're a horse. So that's so he's out of the Kentucky Derby, out of the Belmont Stakes next month. All done. Career, game, set, match, 4-4.
I was gonna say out of the everything from now on, right? Like there's no rescheduling the horse or anything like that. Let me just for people to get a window into your awesome life. So when something like this, when a rumor like this starts, does it completely turn your day around? Like what is it? Because you strike me as the kind of guy that would just drop everything to find out what's going on here.
Yeah, it did. Because in fact, I was just about to put my podcast to bed, and I'll tell you the story. Paul Zilm over at Circa sent me a text. He's the He's the guy who writes the new horse racing futures over there, the Derby futures. Sent me a text. He says, have you heard anything about Nadal getting hurt and not being able to race? And I thought, okay, here we go. So I'm texting Baffert and I'm calling the owners and all this. And finally I land an owner who confirmed it. And so that's exactly what happened. And so instead of my day kind of winding down around, what was it, 1:30 yesterday afternoon Pacific time, it was just getting started. And that was another 7 hours of work, as it turned out. So, you know, these things happen. The last time this happened was that I can remember vividly was at the Kentucky Derby last year when Omaha Beach was scratched at midweek. And I was about to be done for the day and was going to be heading back to the house where we rent during Derby time. And then the news came out. And so, yeah, it does flip everything upside down.
Did we have some audio here, Ron, you wanted to set up? Worth playing?
As a matter of fact, the aforementioned owner we talked to, George Bolton, who is the lead owner of Nadal. I did get him on the phone yesterday for the Ron Flatter Racing Pod. And here's an excerpt where he talks about what the Triple Crown lost by losing Nadal.
You lose the fun, then you lose the next fun, right? Like the Belmont. I mean, I'm a gambler. You know me, I wouldn't do it if I wasn't. I mean, I was psyched. Him versus Tis the Law. It was great for horse racing. And so very sad for horse racing. That's a big, big ticket to lose. You know, that's like having Green Bay come in to pay the New England Patriots. You know what I mean? Having those two horses, right? So the Belmont, now it's Tis the Law against nothing. And, you know, it's a shame for the sport. I mean, that's the big loser is everybody.
Tis the Law becomes the de facto favorite, at least as we broadcast to you today, for the Kentucky Derby this year. Talking to Ron Flatter, by the way, from high atop the strip, where pools are reopening today in many cases. All right, what's the Bob Baffert news? Something went down there as well.
Well, yeah, and Baffert trains Nadal, also trains Charlton. Looks like Charlton may be aimed back for the Belmont Stakes, but it's been a winding road to get to that point from the point where he was early in the week when he was being aimed for the Belmont Stakes. But in between reports that he had a positive drug test for lidocaine, which is actually a legal medicine used for horses to manage, it's like an arrhythmia medicine. But if you overdose on it, then you get red flag. Now, the reports are that there was a first test, an A sample that was red flagged. You test the B sample and see if, you know, the first one was a bad test and the second one might cancel it out. Or if the second sample confirms the first sample, then theoretically Charlton could be disqualified from his victory in his Arkansas Derby on May 2nd. If that happens, he no longer has those 100 qualifying points to get into the Kentucky Derby. Doesn't mean he can't get them later in the summer, but then it also puts a stain on the record, and we start to get into the whole thing again about medication of horses. Baffert has said that, look, this was supposed to be a confidential test for the A sample. If the B sample had come out and something was there, yeah, you understand why it's made public. We just saw a case earlier this week. Hall of Fame jockey Gary Stevens had a false positive for the coronavirus. Second test confirmed he didn't have it, but there was reporting that said he did. So you can see why when the early news gets out, it could be premature. Nevertheless, there are questions about then whether Charlton is going to fully pass this drug test and be eligible for the Kentucky Derby, let alone the Belmont Stakes next month. Baffert was thinking about cutting him back to a sprint because he didn't want to run him against Nadal. Running him against Nadal now a moot point, so he's saying maybe Charlton goes back to the Belmont Stakes.
Okay, and there are your Kentucky Derby futures, courtesy of Circo on the screen there at VSiN.com and the VSiN app. Ron, we're going to have Chris Felica on with some horse racing picks. He's got no fewer than seven later on the show today. I'm sure you have some thoughts today, and if you feel like giving me some rugby league and American Australian rules football, rather, picks as well, you're welcome to.
Well, yeah, by the way, we're 2 for 2 on our NRL picks that were in last week's Point Spread Weekly for this week. So I should have stayed down there. There are many who say, yeah, I should have stayed down there when I lived there. Go to the fifth race of Santa Anita. It's a mile on the turf for maidens 3 years old and up. And this is a maiden claiming race, 62,500 if you want to buy one of these horses. The number one horse, Munnings Pilot, only the second start for him. And his first time out, he got off slow. He was steady. He'd had a bad trip on a short race. Now he's going to extend to the mile. And I think at 5-1, coming out of the one hole, which isn't really that good on the turf at Santa Anita, but not a big sample size. He has trainer Richard Baltus. He has jockey Umberto Rispoli, who's been very good at Santa Anita. So I'm looking at him at a price, a little bit of a price, the number one horse in the fifth race on the turf at Santa Anita. That's Munnings Pilot. As you know, of course, Gil, Munnings baby by Spitestown. So, you know, there's speed at play there. And there's a little bit of front end speed in this race. So we'll see. Maybe he can chase that and get first run on it. So we'll see.
Okay. Ron, I appreciate it as always, man. I know you're working hard these days. The king of all sports.
The pod?
And the podcast. Yes, please, real quick.
George Bolton is on there. We got Anthony Stabile from Horse Racing Radio Network, Paul Zilm from Circa, predictions on races this weekend, Apple, Google, Spotify, iHeart, Stitcher, VSiN.com/podcast, sponsored by First Bet.
Ron Flatter, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming back, UFC with Lou Fittacaro.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Don't forget the new issue of Point Spread Weekly, our digital magazine, is out this week. It features quarterback ratings from South Point sports director Chrissy Andrews. My mishpucha. He signed point values for the differences between the starting and backup quarterbacks for all 32 teams. That is some betting information that you need to handicap the NFL. Sign up now. Get all of Beeson's content free. Until a major sport returns, just go to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up. Once again, that is VSiN.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander here in San Francisco. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago on the show that my dad took a DNA test, and he came up 37.2% Italian. So it may be interesting to you that today on the show, we have Coleandro Finicaro, Felica, and Maliulo. Nothing but Italian guests from here on out, ladies and gentlemen. And so in that vein, we bring in Lou Finicaro. Talk a little UFC with us. How you doing, Lou?
I'm doing great, and I have to say that I feel privileged and honored to be smack dab in the middle of that lineup of four Italians, let alone appear on your show. I'm tickled, Gil. Thank you.
That's a heck of a law firm name, too, also, if that were the case. Lou, before we talk anything UFC, little birdie told me here. First of all, I know this about you, that I know that you bet hockey as well. Playoff hockey is one of your favorite things. And so the NHL, and we stand up and we applaud the NHL for being the first sport to actually put out a more than vague plan, let's call it. But you're kind of going the other way on this. You don't love this, right? That's what I heard.
And I'm glad you're going to give me a couple minutes to expound on that, Gil. Thank
Please.
You. My feeling is, first of all, I love hockey. I love the players, the culture, what it is. I'm happy that they're playing. If I could manipulate what's happening, what I would attempt to do is to protect the most valuable asset of the NHL, which is their players. And I believe the current format puts that most valuable asset at the most peril. It's my belief that in order to play real passionate playoff hockey, that the player has to endure a minimum of 60 games, except for the outlier couple of players coming in off injuries that take a while to ramp up. It's my belief that the best out of five first round, I think that's too many teams. I think that's too many games. That all said, outside of my focus on what I think is going to happen to the players, I think if we track this postseason, injuries that are not cuts related to skates or any kind of fighting injuries, hamstrings, groins, muscle pulls, broken shoulders, that's what you're going to see this postseason at a, I think, escalated rate over other postseasons. And man, do I hope I'm wrong.
Mm. Yeah. Well, you know, listen, we want to get all different perspectives because everybody, you know, you can't have universal love for something. I want to hear somebody who like yourself, who's like, yeah, I don't know about this. You know what? I don't know from a betting standpoint, the nature of the top four seeds in each conference, this round robin in effect for seeding, even in a normal hockey season, the notion of home ice, if it's ever brought up in any sort of significant way, is always overblown again, to get 80% of NBA, playoff favorites get through their series. To get 80% of NHL playoff series favorites through in a normal year, you'd have to play a best of 51. In other words, home ice means nothing anyway. Now you're throwing in an extra layer of this round robin of the top four seeds where it's like, I don't even know if they're playing for seeding, and even if they are, what does it really matter? So like the betting standpoint of that, anybody who, you know, just on the surface, I can't imagine feeling confident betting that particular part of the playoffs anyway.
I totally agree with that avenue that you took. The avenue that I'll take, which is consistent with my injury factor, is as I just on the outside looking in, I'm just beginning my handicapping. There's a couple teams that stand out. But going into it, my feeling is speed, precision, scoring, prowess is not going to be there for a while. And therefore, the teams that play the old New Jersey trap, and by that I mean really solid veteran-laden teams that play from the goal out, that are very defensive oriented, and let's go right to Boston. So Boston would be a team that would absolutely be a target of mine well over Tampa Bay, except for one thing. In game two, Tuukka Rask pulls a groin and he's out. Your chips, your bet goes up in smoke. And so there's going to be peril in betting these playoffs, in my opinion, based on these injuries that are going to come. And I believe they're going to come.
Yeah. Lou Finocchiaro, our Point Spread Weekly UFC expert, but also a guy who loves betting playoff hockey. So I wanted to bring that up first.
Thank you.
We'll keep you for another segment here, Lou, because we're not going to get to all your picks. We'll probably save the picks here for after the break. But I just wanted to start with, because we're in Vegas this weekend for the UFC fight card, and you have done so well on the picks on this show and others on the network. But let's start with the notion of the 30-foot octagon to the 25-foot octagon and what that means from a handicapping perspective to you.
To me, it means, if you do the math, 44% smaller. 44% smaller doesn't mean a lot to Cyphers and Dern that are fighting at 115 pounds, but to Sakai and Ivanov heavyweights, and then you put a third man in that octagon, that's a huge difference. It's 20 feet less wide. And the data that comes, I have to cite Fightnomics, Reed Kuhn's book, because I'm getting this data from his book. 20% more strikes occur in the smaller cage. There's no doubt in my mind that this is a manipulation by the UFC to encourage action.
And action it will encourage. And so I lied. Let's see if I can coax a pick out of you here. Using that as sort of the context, is there one particular matchup tomorrow that actually triggers a bet because of that change that might not have otherwise beforehand?
Yeah, there's two we'll talk about. The first one is the co-main event where Ivanov, heavyweight, who's been in there against more competent competition, bigger, stronger, higher-rated guys, is a Bulgarian undersized but 255-60-pound sambo expert. So he needs to grope. He needs to slow dance. He needs to get this thing against the cage and on the floor. He's fighting a guy going to be 5 inches taller and needs room to maneuver and space to deliver the correct amount of damage that he has to inflict, because if he gets crowded, the long arms and legs can't unleash. And so this cat and mouse in a 30-foot ring would, I think, favor Sakai, and I'd have to give him a strong look. However, because this is in the smaller cage, I think that the Bulgarian Ivanov, with his grappling prowess, is going to have more time, more chance to engage, and therefore I see the fight swinging his way, and at plus 100, he's surely one of my bets this weekend.
And you said there was a second one that also applied to this?
Yeah, later on in the card, there's a Native American kid named Brock Weaver, and he's fighting a very long, tall drink of water by the name of Roosevelt Roberts. Again, these guys are 155-pound guys, not huge, but Roberts is 6'2" and definitely needs to use range, movement to unleash his striking. He's a pretty good, competent submission guy, and Weaver won his debut in the UFC by getting knocked out by his opponent. He was on a knee, and it was an illegal knockout. Weaver has very little technical ability, but he's a raging bulldog, rabid madman. And in a small cage, I think this small cage gives him every opportunity to be successful as a huge underdog against a kid in Roberts that really has very poor takedown defense. And I could see Weaver getting this down on the ground. This could be a much, much closer fight than people believe.
Interesting. So in the Ivanov case, he's about minus 110-ish. You got to always shop around for these because that will vary. And in the Brock Weaver case, what we're showing up on the screen at VSiN.com and the VSiN app is plus 260. You always have a thought, Lou, and like all of us, sometimes we're correct on this, sometimes we're not correct on predicting how the market will move. But are you adopting in either of these cases the wait and see before pulling the trigger on a bet? Maybe in the case of Weaver, do you think that gets better or worse?
I'd be patient with Weaver because the parlay players will definitely be on Roberts. I would go ahead and take Ivanov now. The weigh-ins are at 9 a.m. Pacific time here. But these guys are heavyweights, so I don't have to worry about them weighing in, whereas Weaver and Roberts, I may have to, but I'm less worried about it on that fight. There are a couple fights where, with the smaller cage, if the grappler misses weight, I'll think that it could very well be on purpose to gain advantage to be able to take opponent down in the smaller cage.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right, so we've got two picks here. Well, Ivanov, let's clarify here. Ivanov is an official Lou Finocchiaro pick, and is Weaver just sort of a flyer? How are you characterizing?
No, thank you for letting me clarify. I'm going to release both, but I'm going to release Ivanov as a one-unit bet. I just, if you're a $50, $20, $100 player, whatever, one unit on Ivanov. Weaver, and I've seen him way better than plus 260, but shop around, as you say, that would be a half a unit play. I'm very, very conservative in my outlay. If I take favorites, I like to use them in two-team parlays because I really want to minimize my outlay, but yet maximize return if I can.
All right. More with Sweet Lou at Gamblou on Twitter, GAMBLOU, including his pick in the main event tomorrow night in Vegas. Coming back on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Chris Velika still to come with horse racing picks, seven of them, and Vinny Maliulo as well. Come on back right here at VSiN, Sirius XM Channel 204.